We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
It's always a little bit creepy whenever a large conglomerate of a bunch of big Fortune 500 companies come together and start to dictate bathroom policies.
More and more, God's word is showing up less and less in evangelical preaching.
Every person is going to see something wrong with their pastor. Now, why has the Lord let you see that wrong thing about your pastor? The answer is so that you can pray for them.
Every sin is a form of unbelief, where we do not believe that God's going to take care of us like he takes care of the birds in the air and the flowers in the field.
This is Chaplain Colonel Philip Hauser calling to say that all Christian patriots love doing push-ups while listening to Issues, etc. Carry on.
There's no doubt about it. It was a dangerous thing for several centuries to be a Christian. It wasn't constant persecution for the earliest Christians in the Roman Empire, but it was, well, it was a life where persecution was perhaps just around the corner or just with the next emperor. You never quite knew when and where it was coming. And even as Christianity approached that time of legalization, there was still persecution for Christians. We're going to be remembering one of those persecuted Christians, a martyr who was in fact a third century deacon, Lawrence, remembered on this day, August the 10th, with Dr. Joel Olowski remembering him. When Christians die for the faith, and they do even today, in fact, more in the 20th century than in all previous centuries combined, when they die for the faith, it is a testimony. We'll talk about what kind of testimony the martyrdom of Lawrence was for the earliest Christians. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. live on this Thursday afternoon, August the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Dr. Joel Olowski of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Then, Christ in the Old Testament is the series. It continues with Psalm 18, Part 1, The Lord is My Rock and My Fortress. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. Terry Mattingly of Get Religion joins us after that to talk about a New York Times story about inner city congregations looking to sell their houses of worship. The New York Times deals with it in terms of real estate. He says there's a lot more to that very big story. We'll stay on that subject, but talk about it from a pastoral perspective. Inner city congregations, well, sometimes wanting, sometimes reluctantly selling their property. Dr. Steve Shave will be our guest director of LCMS Urban and Inner City Mission. You can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions or your comments. Feel free to give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about third century deacon and martyr Lawrence, remembered on the 10th of August, Dr. Joel Olowski. He's professor of historical theology and director of the Center for the Study of Early Christian Texts at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, formerly served as the operations manager for the Ancient Christian Commentary on Scripture series. Joel, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks. It's good to be with you.
Usually we're talking about bishops or pastors or theologians. Here we're talking about a deacon and a martyr. What was a deacon in third century church?
Well, deacon, that's an interesting question because they're kind of like an assistant to the bishop, you might say. They were pretty much in charge of the social welfare of the congregation. So in Lawrence's case, they had deacons, and then there were archdeacons, too, even by this time. Most churches only had, they would only have seven deacons, by the way, based on the passage in Acts where the deacons get appointed. And so they actually were probably more of a popular position with the laity because, you know, they were rarer than, let's say, a presbyter in the church. So their primary duty would have been to, like I say, take care of the social welfare of the congregation, but also to assist with the Eucharistic liturgy as well.
So would you say clergy in our modern sense, especially our kind of modern Lutheran sense of the term?
Well, they would have been included in the clerical orders of the time, so, you know, they would have been considered the third element of the clergy. Usually, even in the second century, they talk about bishops, presbyters, and deacons. But whether it would be a strict corollary to what we have today as pastors, probably not. That would probably fit more with either a bishop or a presbyter, I'd say.
What was the state of the church during the time when Lawrence was a deacon?
Well, we're talking about the mid-third century, so the church was still not considered a legal religion, although it was growing by this time, and you know, especially in the cities, you see Tertullian, we'll talk earlier in the third century about Christians in some places outnumbering the pagans, but there's a question whether he might have been exaggerating a bit, but by any rate, pretty much most historians will agree that the church was growing at this point, and that by the time you get to Constantine at the beginning of the 4th century, he was kind of riding this wave, if you will, a little bit, and noticing that Christianity was becoming a force to be reckoned with. But of course, at this time also, in the mid-3rd century, around 251, you have the Decian persecution, well, 250, and then you've got a persecution by Valerian of just a few years later. So, I mean, it was a church under siege, and especially its church leaders were under siege. In fact, the Valerian persecutions actually targeted the clergy in the church specifically.
How would you then describe what the motivation of these two persecutions were, the Decian and the Valerian persecutions of the church?
Well, I mean, the common kind of line among the pagans was that Christianity was ruining the empire and that they weren't worshiping the Roman gods. Therefore, they were atheists and needed to be, brought under control. And sometimes it got to the point where an emperor like Decius would see them as so opposed to the empire that they would, sanction mass persecution. When you look at Valerian's kind of role in this, I think he was looking more at trying to cut off the head, so to speak, of Christianity by targeting the religious leaders. He figured he could, pretty much get rid of Christianity. So they did see Christianity, I guess, in some ways as a threat to Rome in its way of life. And, you know, you still get this in the 5th century with Augustine having to deal with, writing a City of God, where he still has to answer these objections by the pagans that Rome is experiencing the trouble it is because of the Christians, and they're not honoring the Roman gods.
And to rightly understand this, this wasn't exclusively or perhaps even primarily a religious concern. It was, for the Romans, this was how politics was done. This is how statecraft was carried out in conjunction with the Roman religion, wasn't it?
Well, and I would say it's also part of, the civic religion, if you will. Religion and politics were kind of melded together. So if you went to, let's say, a play or games at the stadium, acknowledgement of the gods was going to be part of that. And so Christians were very, they were noticed for their absence in doing that. So it kind of did, affect the civic life, the political life of the realm. So they weren't, I guess you're right, they weren't really arguing so much about religion as about the civic religion, you might say, or the civil society.
Was Christianity technically illegal or just politically unpopular?
Well, it was illegal when they gave the orders, the decrees. And it kind of depended, like in China today, the same kind of thing. It kind of depended on the local leaders, too, to a certain degree. I mean, as I've mentioned to you before, you only have really two empire-wide persecutions, the one by Decius and the one by Diocletian. But, this Valerian persecution was in major cities in Africa as well as in Rome, but it was more targeted, as I said. So was Christianity illegal? It was illicit, let's put it that way. But it was illegal when the emperor decreed it so. And if there wasn't any such decree, it was largely left alone.
What do we know of Lawrence's life, his biography?
Well, as in the case with most of these people we've been talking about, these saints and martyrs, not a lot. He was probably born in Spain. The town is Huesca, which is in northeast Spain, close to the French border. He probably grew up there, educated in Zaragoza, some scholars think, which isn't too far from Huesca. That's probably where he would have met Sixtus II, who later on became Pope in Rome. And in fact, both of them probably moved early on from Spain to Rome. And then Sixtus II becomes the Bishop of Rome. And then there seems like there was a close relationship between Sixtus and Lawrence. And so it seems like he probably would have gone with Sixtus to Rome, where he serves in as one of the seven deacons and probably the leader of the deacons. And he would have been seen in many ways as the right-hand assistant, if you will, like as some describe him as an archdeacon. So he would have been the head of the deacons for Sixtus there in Rome. And so then tradition, well, not even tradition, we can look at historical records and see that he was martyred on August the 10th of 258. And, I mean, those are the hard facts we know. And then there are traditions that have kind of arisen around St. Lawrence that are quite colorful, but also quite instructive, I think.
What runs him afoul of the Roman officialdom eventually?
Well, of course, Sixtus, because of the Valerian persecution, Sixtus, the bishop, gets targeted for persecution. And while he's being led away, there's this conversation that we at least have chronicled in Ambrose and Prudentius that says, Lawrence wanted to be martyred with Sixtus. And Sixtus says, yeah, just wait, in about 3 days you'll be joining me. Well, what Lawrence is then interrogated by the prefect there in Rome, and what the prefect understands is that the church is pretty wealthy by this time. He hears about these sacred vessels and gold and silver and the treasures of the church. And so at least how Ambrose paints it and Prudentius is that the prefect actually was pretty greedy in that he wanted to get a hold of some of the church's wealth. So he challenges Lawrence. Well, not just challenges, he tells him, produce the treasures of the church. And so, you know the story. Lawrence tells him, well, I need 3 days to amass the wealth of the church, and then I'll bring it to you or have you come and see it. So during that time, so the tradition goes, he goes out into the highway and byways, and he sells the church's property, gives it to the poor, but also then gathers them all and brings them to a place where then 3 days later, you know, the prefect is presented with the treasures of the church, so to speak, and instead of it being gold and silver and gems, it's rather the poor, the lame, the crippled, the widows, the virgins of the church. And tradition then goes on to say that the prefect gets really ticked off at this, kind of that, you know, he feels like Lawrence is poking fun at him, so he condemns him to death. Some scholars differ on how actually Lawrence died. Some think that he probably was decapitated like Sixtus was, which, and most of the martyrs, including Cyprian, by the way, was also a martyr in this persecution. Most of them were martyred by beheading, but the story that we read is that he actually had coals prepared and a gridiron, like a grill, where he put Lawrence on the grill and burned his flesh alive. And they even say that while he's burning there on the gridiron, he turns to the prefect and says, why don't you turn me over? I think I'm done on one side. And this even gets him ticked off more. And, of course, then he ends up dying and in a great rage. The prefect kind of condemns everything, but it's quite a fantastic story. Actually, many parts of it survived in the traditions. Like I said, that happened on later, so there's nothing to say that it didn't actually happen that way either.
And like so many of these martyrdoms in the early church, it almost immediately becomes part of the church's narrative, part of the way it thinks of itself. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, in fact, even in the narrative by Prudentius, you get this idea that after Lawrence dies, then, it's a direct affront against kind of the whole way of the Roman gods, and that they look at this as kind of the birth of the church in Rome. I mean, you have Paul's martyrdom, and of course Peter's martyrdom, but this is, they look at the event with Lawrence as kind of the turn of Rome from paganism to Christianity, and you'll get somebody like Constantine in the 4th century even building a basilica over the place where it's believed he was martyred, and this then kind of becomes the narrative that because Lawrence was willing to stand up to the pagan Roman gods, it shows the triumph of Christianity over the Roman Empire and over all those who would oppose Christianity.
That would, in time, prove to be a mixed blessing, wouldn't it?
That's very true, because, in fact, you even see this in some of the bishops who start to worry about the triumphalism of Christianity, and you get somebody like Eusebius reporting the glorious triumph of Christianity through Constantine, but of course that brings its own set of problems. As Christianity becomes the dominant religion, then people's commitment to Christianity becomes more for advancement rather than, you know, for a true commitment to the faith.
What's the best thing that we can remember on August 10th about this third century deacon and martyr, Lawrence?
I think it's the whole aspect of him seeing the true treasures of the church, not being in its riches or wealth, but being in the poor, the oppressed, the very people Christ called us to serve. And to be reminded of that, you know, we can never be reminded of that enough. So a saint like Lawrence is somebody who can bring that to mind for us today.
Dr. Joel Olowski is professor of historical theology and director of the Center for the Study of Early Christian Texts at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He formerly served as operations manager for the Ancient Christian Commentary on Scripture series. Dr. Olowski, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We will do part one of Psalm 18, The Lord is My Rock and My Fortress. This psalm has a rather lengthy introduction. We know when it was written. We'll talk about that after this.
Why are there four Gospels? What happens to unborn babies when they die? What does it mean to fear God? Find faithful, Bible-based answers to tough theological questions when you read the August issue of The Lutheran Witness, a magazine of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness to get 6 issues for only $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Religious liberty, Christians engaging the media, the for you of Christianity, Christian marriage, the sexual revolution, the Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
The Faith, Once for All, Delivered to the Saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.